love of God, I know that all is well. The love of God is love in me and resting in the love.
Let me just invite you to take a few nice deep breaths and just check in with the experience of breathing and sitting. Just becoming aware of your body. And what I'd like you to do now, if your eyes aren't open, would you open them? Because we're going to do something a little different this morning for our meditation. I'm going to offer you, and again, this is an offering. So if you don't want to participate in it, you don't have to. But I want to offer you an opportunity to practice skills in listening. Listening. Oftentimes, well, our brains take in millions of bits of information per second. We only process a fraction of that information consciously, which means there's a lot of noise that goes on behind the scenes that we're not aware of. And it shows up in listening. And I see this happen all the time. I'm guilty of it myself. When we listen and we're not conscious, we're listening to respond. And when we do that, oftentimes we talk past each other or we talk around each other and we never meet and we never connect. So then we're taught skills like active listening. Any of you taught that? You know, say, uh-huh, yeah, ask questions, you know. We might be taught a skill, empathic listening. You know, listen as if the other person is there. Listen as if you are in the other person's shoes. But the skill I'd like to invite us into today is what I call holy listening. And holy listening is that place of being able to hold and be held with two different realities, two different truths. What's true is what's real for you. What's true is what's real for the other person. And one of the things I notice in listening is I'm learning a lot from nature. For example, Lake Coeur d'Alene. Lake Coeur d'Alene has been the recipient of high levels of arsenic from mining things that's gone on. And I've often wondered, what would the lake feel like if it watched us humans bicker and squabble with each other over what to do about this high level of arsenic? You know, the lake just sits there and watches and listens. In our front yard, there's a 25-year-old maple tree that I oftentimes go to, and I've laughed with that tree, I've cried with that tree, and everything in between. And you know what that tree does? Nothing. It's just there. So here's what I'm going to invite you to do. Find a partner. Could be someone that you came with. It could be someone not that you didn't come with. And I'm going to invite you to, as partners, just talk to each other for 2 minutes, okay, about anything you want, okay? If you need a prompt, you could talk about the weather, how you feel about snow or rain. It could be what you're doing after church. It could be anything that's going on. This doesn't have to be deep or anything like that. But as the person talks, what I'd like for the other person to do is just listen. And just notice what it's like to just listen. Notice in your body what's going on. As you're talking, notice what it's like to just talk and be listened to. Okay? And then after 2 minutes, we're going to switch. And it'll be the other person to talk, listen. And again, if you can't fill the time, just sit in silence. It's okay. There's no right or wrong way to do this. And then we'll have a time to stop and just watch what's going on. Here's what I'm noticing with me. Any of you familiar with the Enneagram? I'm an Enneagram type 2, so I'm the helper. I'm the servant. When someone's with me, there's a default in me that wants to help, wants to rescue, wants to fix, okay? And sometimes I'm learning that gets in the way, you know? I'm a classic codependent, you know, first of five boys, alcoholic family. So yeah, next to the word codependent in the dictionary, people pleaser, approval seeker, there's a picture of James Cress. And so I'm learning how to, again, not hate that or pathologize it or try to fix it, but just notice and love it as a pattern that I developed. And something special happens when we can wholly listen with each other. We enter that middle space, the mystery who wants to emerge. All right? Some of you are looking like, oh God, what are we doing here? Just relax and have fun with it. So go ahead and find a partner. Okay. Does anyone, hold on just a minute. Don't start yet. Okay. Does anybody who needs a partner not have a partner? Is anybody else looking for a partner? Kelly? Right back there, okay? Excellent. All right. Okay. Hold on. Now, here's what we're going to do, okay? I'll keep track of time. Does everybody know who's going to talk first? You okay with that? Does anybody need help, something to talk about?
Doesn't sound like it.
Okay. All right. Hold on. Shh. No, this is what this great question. This is not a conversation. This is one person talking, and all the other person is doing, all you're doing is listening. You're not asking questions, you're not interacting, you're just listening. This might be stretching some new muscles for some of you, okay? But just notice how it is to just listen, notice how it is to just talk, okay? And then we'll switch. I'll keep track of time. Are you ready? Set? Go. Twenty seconds. Okay, let's go ahead and finish your thought. Yeah, if you can finish up your thought. Okay. Yeah. Okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to switch. The person who's been listening is going to just talk for 2 minutes straight. And it can be a completely different subject. I'd like to ask you to not, like, continue on with what the other person was saying. Again, this isn't a conversation. This is just listening, okay? So whatever you want to talk about, for 2 minutes. All right? Go. When this is done, I'm going to ask them to just be quiet and be still and listen. Would you be willing to just play real quietly, and then Julie will cue you when to come on in. Go ahead and wind down your thoughts. Okay. Now what I'd like you to do is just take a few nice deep breaths. Just take a few nice deep breaths. And this time, if you're comfortable, just allow your eyes to close as you breathe, as you slow down. And I'd like you to just guide your attention now back to yourself, and particularly your body. And again, without trying to fix, change, or even necessarily understand anything, just take a notice of what's happening in your body as you experience holding and being held in different truths and different realities. And just explore. I just want to invite you to do that, and then after a couple moments, we'll end with singing again. Thank you. Jim, is it okay if I use the microphone here? Would a couple, two or three of you be willing to share just how that experience was, what you noticed, learned, discovered, didn't like?
I discovered, is this on?
Yeah.
Oh, I discovered that it was hard for me not to respond to her. And instead of speaking, I was able to control myself, but I would always shake my head or motion with my hand because of that desire to interact. But I did enjoy just listening, and I enjoyed it, but it was hard because it was new.
Right.
And as far as my speaking, oh, I had a lot of fun just talking it up about my great-grandson.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Anyone else? Of course. Seen as my plant, you know. I'm just kidding. No, I'm just teasing.
When I was sharing, I felt, as Tanya was listening, I felt a lot of comfort coming from her because I didn't just see her listening. I felt her listening. And made a big difference in what I was saying because I wasn't just saying to myself. Saying it out loud, she was literally taking in my feeling, my emotion, and understanding what I was feeling. And it was really hard for us to not talk to each other.
Yeah, that's honest. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Anyone else? Tammy, would you pass?
It was really nice to be able to get to know Susie, and not on a superficial level, because, you know, you're in church, hi, how are you, blah, blah, blah. You know, you talk about everything here, the foam right on the top.
Yeah.
But it was really nice in the two, because it was two full minutes, and she's wonderful.
Yeah.
But I never knew it, and I'm sitting right next to her. So it was, but it was good to know somebody on a deeper level than you get from just small talk.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you, Tammy. All right, I think we've got another.
Yeah. In listening to Jenny, I was able to give up my own pain. I found I came in with some pain. People wouldn't understand, but my Packers lost last night, and that, for me... I know it's a game, but my heart doesn't, and I invest a lot. I have since my whole life, and for them to lose last night doesn't mean anything to anybody else, but it's painful for me. And so being able to speak about it and then give her time to speak, I just listened and gave up the pain that was there for me in listening.
Nice.
So that was wonderful. Thank you.
Nice. Thank you. You want to pass to Nancy?
I love
there.
The Packers, too.
So do I.
Go Seahawks.
It was nice talking to my husband on a just listening basis, you know, because we have conversations a lot, and we know each other well, but it was really good, I think, for both of us to just have to search without reacting, or like Donna said, without saying something, to just let that conversation just open however he wanted to talk or however I wanted to talk. That was good.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. We'll make this the last one. This is wonderful.
Well, for me, it was a wonderful getting to know somebody that I hadn't met. Kind of everything everybody said, and for me, it was a re-remembering, because I grew up close to the earth and slow, and as I got to be an adult, I got busier and busier and more in my head, and kind of lived, you know, I've lived there in kind of both worlds, but it was like, oh. And I've also had the great pleasure of knowing somebody who was the most exceptional listener I've ever met. And to be in her presence, that's what you, she was a counselor, but that's what you paid for in essence. It's like somebody with all their being listen to you. And I just, like, every time I go through an exercise, it's like, oh, you know, what else can I learn from having been around this being who was the most exceptional listener? And I worked for her, and I was like, these people come out healed. Like, what's going on in there? I mean, and I knew, but she just listens, true, pure listening. It's magical.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm not a licensed therapist, but I'm a trained therapist. I know enough to be dangerous. And it's interesting, you know, how, you know, many of us, and this is with all due respect, I believe in therapy and, you know, have one myself, but, you know, we pay money for someone to listen to us. And what could shift? What could shift if we just learned how to listen? Anybody here familiar with psychological safety? Anybody here experience not psychological safety in a relationship? Mm-hmm. Does anybody here find psychological safety in nature? So just interesting to reflect, why? When I walk through the forest with the trees, they're just there. They're not running to hold me and fix me and, oh, I'm so sorry for you, or freak out with me or anything like that. But I wonder what would change if we just really learned how to listen. And just thinking about our world today, just a couple housekeeping things before we get into the message. At 1 o'clock today, was it? 1 o'clock today at Independence Point, there's going to be a vigil for any of you that would like to go in honor of what's happened in Minnesota this week and the shooting that's there and everything that's going on. So if you'd like to go to that, do that. What's your name?
Shannon.
Shannon's here. Can people talk to you about it afterwards if they have questions? So you can do that. second housekeeping thing, the classes that start next week, next month, thank you. They start at 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock, okay, to allow choir members to come and everything. So if you want to go to lunch or take me to lunch, you know, hey, that'll work out. That'll be just good, okay? Or come sing. Yes, come sing. Well, we're talking about that next month. Okay, and just last bit of housekeeping. You may have noticed warmth in the building. We now have, yes, 3 brand new furnaces. And so... Thank you, and J.A. Birch was the vendor we went with. This is not intended as an infomercial to them, just as much as a thank you for how good they've been to us and in working with us, and we've fixed some things there. So I'm really tempted to tell you how much it cost.
Don't.
I'll save it for later. Good. All right. No, don't. Yeah, but it's going to tie into what I'm talking about here, so maybe at some point we'll talk about that. But yes, just very, very grateful. So we have 3 functioning furnaces right now. I like the smell of new furnace. It's kind of like a variation of new car smell. So it's really nice. So we're just really grateful. And David Meyer here has done an exceptional job just researching and overseeing that project for us. So, all right. Yes. Today is part 2 in a 4-part series of messages of finding freedom in abundance, and it's all about the spiritual practice of giving. And so I want to kind of tie back to this exercise in listening we did by just telling you a little story. Living our lives forward. So it's been said that the unfinished work of others is our work to do. So as we think of those of you who've been a part of Science of Mind, Unity Teachings, Ernest Holmes, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, they've written a lot on giving and prosperity and all of that kind of stuff, but there's an unfinishedness to their work that's ours to do. I could spend a month up here just reading you principles from a book. It would bore me, so that's why I'm not doing that. I'd get bored with myself doing that. No, I want to take those principles and live them forward. When Jesus was on earth, he said, look, you think I'm doing some great stuff? You're going to do even greater stuff. And Jesus did some pretty amazing stuff, raising the dead, healing the blind and the deaf and the lepers, making water into wine. Yes, yes, yes. Yes. And Jesus said, oh, yeah, no, you're going to do even greater stuff. You think that stuff's great? It's going to be even better. And when I think about that, I think about a changed heart, a changed mind, changed, seeing the world with new eyes, hearing the world with new ears, feeling the world with a new heart, thinking about the world with a new mind. Yeah, yeah, that goes a lot. And so that really applies to this idea of giving, and specifically our relationship with money. But I'll come back to that. This is from the How is James Adjusting to Life in Coeur d'Alene file. So yesterday I was out running some errands and just found a couple of these images that I took that are about life in Idaho.
Ned Blanchard. Yeah.
And so what I'm doing is I'm sending these images to my kids and my friends and family back in Seattle saying, see what I love about Idaho? This is wonderful. And and there's something else that's not on here. So is anybody else in here triggered by music? Yeah. Raise your hands.
In a good way.
Anyway, yes, yeah. Okay, sure. So, you know, I'm a music guy. I spent 16 years in the church as a church music director, so we're going to, again, talk about that in a couple months, how you can be involved here. But I'm triggered by music, and you know what it is? Country music.
Oh.
If there was a hell, it would be country music, you know? But here's the deal. I was in Ace Hardware yesterday, and a Tim McGraw song was playing, and I was like, I got a lump in my throat. I thought, you know, and it was something about I want to raise my family where the green grass grows or something like that, and I was just touched. I Shazammed the song and sent it to my kids, and they're like, Dad, come on, duh. You know? But it's just interesting. I sent this photo to some friends of mine and a daughter of theirs. A few weeks ago, this daughter reached out to me and said, hey, we're thinking about moving to Coeur d'Alene. How does it sound, James? And so I've, you know, of course, the way James Cress's mind works, in my enthusiasm, I thought, oh, if they move over here, maybe their sister will move over here, their mom and dad, who have been, you know, my longtime friends of 20-plus years, and I thought, man, this could be great. We could just have our own, you know, Seattle, and I know some of you are thinking, don't come over here anymore. We don't want people coming. But last night, you know, the mother called me and said, hey, This is a touchy spot in our family because they live close to each other and live close to their grandkids. And, you know, when the daughter talks about moving 5 hours away, it's like a big deal. Also, culturally, and I've shared this with you before, this week I had someone come up to me and say, wow, James, you got to be excited to get out of Seattle. That place is on fire and it's not safe. And I said, no, I'm going through a lot of grief leaving Seattle. This month, my apartment expires. This is the first time in 53 years I'm not going to have an address of my own in Washington.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've had to ask my kids when I go to Seattle, you know, can I sleep on your couch, you know, or my friends or Airbnb? That's a shift. Now, I just want to say this. I'm aware that I'm saying this as a white male. And me walking the streets of downtown Seattle as a white male is a very different experience than a person of color or a female walking the streets of Seattle. But I just want to just draw our attention to this. This summer, this city experienced the loss, I think it was, of two firefighters and a gunman. So I don't see North Idaho as any safer than Western Washington. And this is where this listening exercise comes in. If we can learn to honor our fear and to understand how fear clouds and distorts our ability, or even our joy and enthusiasm distorts our ability to do it. And it was interesting, as this person, my friend, was explaining to me how I was kind of picking a scab by sending these images to them and their daughter, you know, I found in myself, oh, I didn't mean it that way. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, I'm just, you know, I mean, all these, you know, because I'm James. I'm the hero. I'm the best guy in the world. And it was just like, thank you for telling me. Thank you for telling me. And I'm learning that in these transitions of life, there's a range of emotion, a range of experience, a range of our feeling that is all meant for our growth and our transformation. If I can shift now to what is our relationship with this thing called money? Can we listen? Can we listen to it? I left off last week talking about giving as a spiritual practice. And in the pathway along spiritual path, this is a statue of Michelangelo. When Michelangelo sculpted this, they asked him how he did it, and he said, "I chipped away at everything that wasn't David."
Yep.
You know, and what if your life and my life is the same way? Life, love, is chipping away at all that isn't you and me. And what if maybe, just maybe, part of that rock of sculpture is our relationship with this thing called money? This, again, I'm just offering you something here. But are there things in your life that you might find yourself being chipped away of in this area of money? When you engage, here's living the teachings for it. I'll just be honest with you. Even in these circles, New Thought and Unity and all this kind of stuff, there's this idea of prosperity. And people who tell stories of, being a single parent, working two jobs, having nothing, they start tithing to their church, and now they're living in mansions, flying first class, they've got servants and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just being honest with you. When I hear that, it's like, good for you, you know, hallelujah. And then there's just something in me that wonders, you know, is this what the spiritual teachers and the masters taught, you know? And how much of this idea of giving to get, either overtly or covertly to get rich, is feeding some of our consciousness around it? I don't know. But I can tell you this. When you give as a spiritual practice, you will get what you need, which may or may not be what you want. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Some of you are looking at me really spiritual, like, what's this guy doing, okay? Here's the shift. How many of you have been taught how to steward your money, how to manage it, okay? What I'd like you to do is, and you don't have to do this, but I'm a visual guy, you know, maybe hold out your left hand and take all of that teaching you've learned about how to balance your budget, how to hold your budget, how to manage money and all that kind of stuff, and just say, thank you, I love you, thank you, I love you. Do any of you know Dave Ramsey? Okay, I was weaned on Dave Ramsey as a young pastor and a young dad and a young husband. You know, savings is good, debt is of the devil, you know, and you just live your life that way, you know. Anybody here know Jack Welch, former CEO of GE? Do you remember what his famous saying was, Tammy? Cash is king, okay? And when all of those teachings are a power grab. You know, save money so you can have the power. You know, don't be indebted because the debtor has power over the debtee. You know, so do whatever you can to avoid debt and get out of debt. Just to be honest with you, you know, James, my financial trajectory has been about as backwards as it can be. I told you last week I'm in more debt than I've ever been in. Just know it's temporary. It's gonna resolve itself. So don't, like some of you are like, oh my gosh, are we gonna lose our minister? No. But you know, I'm a 59-year-old white guy, and I have a story, an American story, that says I'm supposed to have a seven-figure portfolio, an eight-figure net worth, have homes and property and wealth to pass on to my kids. That's not the case. I don't own a home. When I leave Seattle next month, I'm going to have boxes of books and boxes of clothes, and my 2016 Audi, which is my guilty pleasure. It's got 102,000 miles on it. I love it. So I do have that. And my my financial advisor, she's awesome, back in Seattle, but I have this kind of awkward relationship living with her because talking with her, I don't live with her. I can't believe I said that. No. But when I meet with her, she just looks at me in these puppy dog eyes and says, James, retirement? Can you kind of start thinking about it? You know, and I'll just say, I don't, you know, retirement, I mean, no judgment, but I know for some people, retirement is going to Arizona, living in a golf community, and playing bingo and bunco and all that kind of stuff. What I love is there's some of you in here that you don't retire, you re-fire.
Yeah.
See? So I don't know what that looks like for me. You know, I told you last week that I would do this here for free, and I sincerely mean that. I mean, I do need to, some of you are going, really? Wow, yeah, you know. No, I do have bills to pay and obligations to meet, and so yes, money is a part of that conversation, but I am so much in love with this community and what I do here. It's such a blessing that it's like money is just an afterthought, you know, and it's not about that. So that's, you know, that's what it is. But I want us to see if we can transition, and these reflections here over the next few weeks are going to be not to jettison money management. That's why I want you to hold it, love it, thank it, appreciate it. I've told you last week, I love our board here, and I'm just giddy with joy about many, many things, how much they love and care for this congregation and how conservative they are financially. This week, I'll talk about it more next week, but we've got a very conservative, balanced budget for this year, and I'm just grateful for that. You know, they're not pie in the sky and do weird things. I mean, I'm so grateful for that. But what I'd like to introduce you to is to this idea of kinship with money, and particularly your money. If your money could talk, what would it say? And this goes back, help. And this goes back to this practice of listening. It goes back to this practice of listening. Can you do with your money what you just did with each other? And be mindful of your thoughts, your projections, your assumptions, your biases that you want to project onto it. And just listen to it. Could that money have something to say to you about your relationship with God? About your relationship with each other? About your relationship, you know, with the community? I'm going to do something here. I'm going to ask you to... I'd like to take off my minister hat, because some of you might be thinking, okay, here's the minister talking about money at the church, all right? I want to just take off my minister hat and put on my James hat.
There you okay? Go.
This is my Priest Lake hat that I got this summer, because I love Priest Lake. And this is just things I would say to you as a part of this congregation, part of this community, okay? This isn't like a sell job or anything about money for the church. This is just about my own journey that I hope will enrich you and deepen your relationship with money, okay? First, how does this saying land with you? Any of you Bible geeks out there know the teachings of Jesus? Is that what he said?
It's where your attention is. I mean, and you can see what really matters to you by where you spend your time and effort and where your attention is.
Yeah. I played a little trick on you. Right. This is what Jesus actually said. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be. But how many of us let our hearts lead? I don't know how I feel about that organization. I don't know how I feel about that process. I don't know how much I know. Am I going to get a return on my investment? Okay. I've been a minister for 30 plus years, 22 of them full-time employed by a church, 8 of them bivocationally, meaning I had a day job, and my day job was in banking. I worked for Bank of America, BECU, and Seattle Credit Union. I told you those stories last week. People would often say, why are you in banking? I said, easy. There are two things very close to people's heart, God and their money. And there's not a lot of distinction between the two. But how, you know, and I know that this church has a story. I'm going to introduce a practice here in just a minute to you. But this church has a story of a relationship with money. I learned this week that there was a period of time where people here were told not to give designated giving, but just give to the general fund, because the High Holy Jedi Council, known as the Board of Trustees, know how to handle it, you know, basically telling you that you're unwise and don't know what to do with it and all that kind of stuff. There's a story. There's a story with that. This is about your journey and being free with money. Jesus taught two stories. There was one story of in the church, the offerings were being given, and a widow came up and put in two small copper coins. Do you know this story? Jesus stopped and said, hey, this woman came and put in everything she had. Now, this is where we need to interpret it mythically and metaphysically. This isn't Jesus putting a guilt trip saying, go empty your retirement and give it to Unity Center, okay? And I've heard some teachers teach on that, and I just cringe. Jesus taught also about a rich young ruler. Someone came up to him and said, hey, teacher, what must I do to inherit an eternal life? And Jesus said, hey, one thing you lack, go sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and then come follow me. Now again, is Jesus teaching everybody's got to empty their bank accounts and give it all away? You know, if you're a legalist and a literalist, you might say that, okay? With Jesus, it's not about how much or how little you have. It's about how much or how little you have has you. And this question, I think, applies to every man and every woman in here. Because for a man, at least this man, it's about accumulate, save. You know, I was on the dating sites and I saw women who want a man who's financially secure and stable, you know, meaning you better have $1 million in the bank and a house free and clear and all of that. And sorry, it's not me. You know, and women have a relationship with it. I'm not a woman, so I can't speak to that. But this idea of security means a lot, you know, and having enough in the world today. Jesus is inviting, not in a condemning, not in a guilt-producing way, but in a warm invitation to be free. Let money serve you. Don't serve money. And as you listen and as you think about your relationship with money, listen to it and maybe ask the question, money, how do you want to serve me? Instead of being enslaved to what the world and what our culture says it means to be financially free. So I want to just leave you today with three practices. I have this love-hate relationship with spiritual tools because I've got a spiritual toolbox that would rival a Home Depot distribution center, you know? I have more tools. I don't know what to do with them, all right? But these are three practices that maybe you haven't thought about that can maybe help you begin to develop, not, you know, again, I'm not saying not to steward your money, but to grow in your relationship. Are you ready? Here's the first one.
Done that.
Have you?
Yes.
Yeah. You know that my father died in August of last year. My mother died the year before that. This week, death has touched our family very closely. And there's something very sacred, very holy about being with someone as they're passing and being with family members as they are grieving that past one. It's holy. Life realigns itself. Life resets itself. And all those things that are clamoring for my attention, all those people, all those projects, all those relationships, all those things. Walking a cemetery, for me, is a way that I connect with my ancestors. Now, some of you here, you know, are in your shamanic stuff, and you see visions and all that kind of stuff and do your rituals. Cool. And I've experienced that as well, breath work and drumming and trance work and all that kind of stuff. Yes, I've had that. But something as simple as just walking a cemetery has this way of connecting with an ancestral wisdom. Because what you see a lot of in a cemetery are headstones. And on every headstone, generally, in most cases, you see a name, two numbers, and a dash. We didn't bring anything with us into this world, and we sure as hell aren't taking anything out of it. And many of us want to leave our, you know, kids' homes and 401ks and toys and all this kind of stuff, you know. And yet at the end, I think it was Abraham Lincoln who says, it's not about the number of days in your life, it's about the amount of life in your days. And when we can decouple ourselves from the power of money and see it really as a portal to the power of love, cool stuff happens. How about this one? What is your financial autobiography or resume? If you haven't done this yet, I would invite you to do that. And maybe in the weeks to come, you might want to just share it with the community here. I don't know. We might just do that. But what are the, and when I say write about your resume, you know, what are the stories you've been told? What are your dreams? What are your hopes? What are your aspirations? But here's the thing. Don't condemn them. Don't judge them. Too many churches, you know, I've heard many preachers get at their pulpit and bang their fist on the wall about, you know, money, 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 and wealth. No. Can you love that story? But here's something I would invite you to do. Could you write a failure resume? What do we do when we interview for a job, right? Tell me about your successes and your accomplishments. I find that boring. I've done enough interviews in my life. It's just like, okay, yeah, I measured this. I did that, you know, whatever. I worked in HR at BECU, you know, and we always had to, how are we going to measure our success? You know, because we're teaching skills like empathy and listening and getting along with each other and psychological safety, you know, so we take a survey. How do you feel about yourself now? Teach a class. How do you feel yourself about it now? And we get this data-driven decision to sort of justify. And I have to tell you, I'd sit in these, well, that's why I got, part of why I got fired. I would sit in these meetings and I'd go, oh, for the love of God, you know, can we just do something because it's the right thing to do?
Amen.
Can we stand for justice? Can we stand for love? Can we stand for inequity without giving a shit about what it's going to cost and do it because it's the right thing to do? Yeah. You can tell I feel passionately about it. And if I go broke doing it, so be it, you know. Okay, but that's the arc of my life. Think about it with yourself. You know, what is your resume? Okay? Third, to me, what is financial freedom? What does it mean to be financially free? I want to relate this one to love, okay? Because when we think of love, we think of love as having no limits, no boundaries, you know? And I think we could say with money, when we talk about abundance, there's a thing where we can talk about, you know, money has no limits or no bounds. Somebody said, you know, if we could take all the world's wealth and divide it among the population, everybody would have about $4 million to their name. So it's not an abundance problem, it's a distribution problem. You know, sure, maybe, perhaps, okay? But think about love for a minute and our relationship with love. Monogamy used to mean one person for life. Mm-hmm. You know what it means today? One person at a time. We say to ourselves, I'm monogamous in all my relationships. Okay? And again, no judgment, but now carry this over into money. Do you feel overwhelmed? Do you feel burdened? Do you feel gripped down? You know, all of this choice, all of this freedom, all that we have today, I think, is connected to depression, to sadness, to burnout. Why? Because there's always one more person to love. There's one more thing to give to. There's one more thing to, you know, to where we get all in bondage and go, wow, did I really make a difference? Well, man, that church down the road there does this and that, and that person over there does that, and we just can't rest in the joy of having a single-minded focus. All right. So what if, I shared this last time, we considered ourselves a spiritual cooperative of mutual accountability to one another. I told you one of the reasons I loved working in credit unions was because of the business model. For-profit companies raise money by seeking investors who will give to that company, and what do they expect from it? A payout. Any Shark Tank fans in here? You know, Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful, the man everyone loves to hate, you know, what did he care about? I want to make money, you know, and people hated him for it, but I always thought, hey, at least the guy's honest, you know, all right? But that's the capitalistic engine, okay? How do nonprofits raise money? They solicit donations, and they have fundraisers, after fundraiser, after fundraiser, after fundraiser. I've participated in them. This little art piece back here, I got it at a fundraiser for the Coeur d'Alene Arts Commission. True story, I had one too many gin and tonics, and I ended up bidding on five things, And I won all five of them. I spent way more money than I thought, but you know what? I don't regret it a bit, because I am happy to support the arts in this community. I love it. It's vibrant. There was another fundraiser I went to this summer. I did the same thing. It was an auction type thing, you know. And hey, right now we've got a donor that's going to match your donation up to $5,000, you know. And so I got all caught up in that and spent way more money than I thought I was going to plan. But you know what? No, I'm going to support this. You know, NPR. If you listen to NPR, you know, it's always a call to call. It's not a call to action. It's a call to call. Please call, you know. And so we get our heartstrings tugged. And some of that comes into the church. And that's a part of this church's story. And I'm sensing a weariness with all the fundraising that's going on here. And so I wonder if this relationship from stewardship to kinship and from being a nonprofit to a cooperative in credit union world, profits are not paid out to investors. They're not trying to solicit donations from outside the community. No, the money that they make gets reinvested back into the community for in credit union space, financial health. What if we did that here? And you're not accountable to me. You're not accountable to the board. You're not accountable to Unity Worldwide Ministries. And I'm just going to say this, because some of us here are really concerned about our tie to Unity and being a 501c3. They don't hold the keys to that. Okay? We hold the keys to that by our behavior. If we start becoming a political action committee, that might go away. That's why we're hesitant to, you know, do signatures and things like that here for political causes. We, you know, do we believe in them? Yes. Should our spirituality inform what we do? Yes. But we're not a political action community. We're a spiritual community that informs our action. That can mess with our 501c3 more than whatever happens to Unity. Okay? so, but what it is, as a cooperative, we're accountable to each other. We start with looking ourselves in the mirror and being real clean about our relationship with money. And then we look each other in the eye, and we're real clear and we're real clean with each other about our relationship with money. And together, as a community, we watch it multiply for the purpose of living love and uplifting lives. Mindful of what we can learn from the past. I learned this week that this church had a pretty aggressive three-phase building program at one point. You know, this is phase one. Phase two was out there, and phase three was over there, you know, and what minister doesn't love that? And as a father and grandfather, I've got three kids, I've got three grandkids and a fourth on the way, you know, do I dream about a church that they would love to come to? Sure, but you know what? All three of my kids left the ginormo giga church, evangelical church that I used to pastor in. One of them's in an Orthodox church, very small. A second one is in a Reformed Christian church, very small. And the third one is building her own spiritual community online. It's fascinating. Oh, she's a whiz kid online. Yeah. I'm just, oh my gosh, how she does this. So as we think about what does spiritual growth look like here, what does it mean? We can learn from the past. And I'm not saying I'm attached to anything here. But if what's driving you is trying to want to go back to that, let me remind you of the words of Soren Kierkegaard. Life is understood backwards, but it must be lived forward. This is a new day. This is a new time. And if we can double down on living love and uplifting lives, if we can double down on being generous, if we can double down on being single-focused and not spread all over the place, if we can double down on giving, I think we're going to be really surprised. I don't have the foggiest clue what it looks like. You know, we may be surprised. We may get smaller before we get bigger. Hey, that's cool. God doesn't care about numbers. He cares about love. Jesus oftentimes drew crowds away. He didn't gather crowds, you know. And he didn't follow up his healing with, come to my workshop and read my book about how you can heal people and all that kind of stuff, okay? He just did it. And they said, now you go figure it out yourselves, okay? But if we do this, I think we'll experience a shift, and we'll unpack this more next week, okay? From being driven to give to being drawn to give. Think about the shift, and in your conversations with money this week, are you driven to give? And this doesn't apply just to your money. It could be to service. Why do people burn out? At least I know why I burn out. If I'm driven to something, if I feel like I'm, you know, either being made to feel guilty by someone else or feeling guilty myself and I drive, I flame out. And churches are notorious for that. I think because they sit under guilt-inducing teaching, and so they think, oh, you know, whatever. But if your giving is a spiritual practice, you're going to be drawn to give. Michael Beckwith puts it this way, pain pushes. So some of you come, you know, from pain, and we all have it, you know, pushes you away from something. Vision pulls. And I want to live in that place of where vision pulls. But it happens before vision pulls. Sometimes the old has to be deconstructed. We're still in the year of the snake. Right, Amber? Yeah. We're still shedding. Okay, so the calendar says, our calendar says 2026. In the Chinese New Year, it's still 2025. We're still shedding. We have a decorating committee here. One of the things I love about what they're doing is they're asking themselves, what can we get rid of? What can we not get rid of? What can we release into the community, you know, for freedom and do that? But when we do this, here's what we do. We shift from fundraising to fundraising. I don't know, Dennis, where if I got it from you, but I heard it from Dennis this week, and it was just like, yes, yes, yes. We're not doing events. We're not doing book sales and bake sales and this and that. And the other thing is we need money to meet the budget. No, we're doing it because we want to elevate fun. We want to elevate community. We want to elevate connection. We want to bring love into this thing. And we know that the money's going to be there. There's a shift in consciousness. Can you feel it? That's what I really hope we can capture. Amen?
Amen.
All right. We'll put a comma there and pick it up next week. So thank you.
Heart beats so imperfectly, but when you come.